Welcome to Whiskey Cast, the Cask Strength podcast featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 131 for February 10th, 2008. Coming up in a few minutes...
You would think that Bowmore is going to be smoky. That's the signature of Bowmore. But when it gets to 42 years old, that smokiness has dropped away dramatically.
That's Ian McMillan, the blender and chief nose at Morrison Bowmore, and he's talking about the return of the legendary Black Bowmore. I'll have more with Ian later, along with tasting notes. First, though, let's look at the news. B.J. Malia's purchase of White & Mackay is almost a year old now, and his UB Group is starting to make some changes. The Hindu Business Line cites UB Group President Ravi Nedangadi's plans to move White & Mackay away from supplying bulk scotch to selling more under its own brand names. Nedangadi told the Business Line he wants to move from 80% bulk sales to about 50% over the next 3 or 4 years. However, there is one change that may have an impact on some whiskey lovers. Nedangadi wants to cut back the number of countries where White & Mackay whiskies are sold from about 40 now to several key markets, focusing on the UK and the US, along with Russia, India, China, Taiwan, and South Korea. After 15 years, the stills should be humming at the old Charles Medley Distillery in Owensboro, Kentucky later this year. Angostura bought the distillery last year from the Medley family and is investing $10 million on a renovation project. Angostura also bought the old Seagram Distillery just upstream along the Ohio River in Lawrenceburg, Indiana last year, and plans to target the bourbon market in Europe and Asia several years from now. A couple of awards to mention. First, Gordon & MacPhail was named the UK's Independent Spirits Retailer of the Year at the recent Drinks Retailing Awards. If you've ever made the pilgrimage to South Street in Elgin, you'll understand why. And George Washington's distillery at Mount Vernon won honors for architectural excellence and historical preservation from the Virginia Society of the American Institute of Architects. If you'd like to find out more about the distillery, check the archives at the WhiskeyCast website for episode 108 from last September. By the way, the website has had some restoration work of its own. It's been redesigned to make things a bit easier to find, but you may have to tweak some of your bookmarks since some of the file names have changed. That's at www.whiskeycast.com. Time now for the calendar of events brought to you by Laphroaig. The Scotch Malt Whiskey Society will hold a tasting of Campbelltown whiskies at the Vaults in Leith on February 18th. The Brandy Library in New York City has an introduction to Scotch class on the 19th. The Glenlivet City Links Tour moves to Atlanta for a tour stop from February 19th through the 22nd. The Celtic Malts Whiskey School's next session is February 21st in suburban Philadelphia. Julian and Preston Van Winkle of Old Rip Van Winkle Bourbon will host a tasting at Milroy's of Soho in London on the 27th. Whiskey Live London is February 29th and March 1st. And one of my favorite events, the North Netherlands Whiskey Festival in Groningen, is that same weekend. John Hansel of Malt Advocate will host a tasting of whiskies from demolished distilleries on March 10th at Monk's Cafe in Philadelphia. You'll find a complete calendar of events at the WhiskeyCast website, and it's brought to you by Laphroaig Quarter Cask. Become a friend of Laphroaig and claim your own square foot of Isla at Laphroaig.com. The legendary Black Bowmore is back. It's not just a copy of the original trilogy, but the same spirit distilled at Bowmore in 1964, just a few years older. I had the chance to taste it with Bowmore's chief nose and blender, Ian McMillan, and Bowmore brand ambassador, Jimmy Robertson.
The story of the Black Beaumont was in 1963, the Morrison family bought the Beaumont distillery. And Brian Morrison's actually on record in saying that the product that was coming out before 1963-64 was tasting like cat's piss. That's a comment from Morrison himself, Brian himself. 64, what they did is they switched over from coal-fired stills to steam-fired, well, not fired, but steam-operated stills. They moved a boiler over. There's a great story of this boiler being shipped over from Clydebank by the Royal Navy. I don't know if you've seen you can see it on our website. The boiler came over. It had to come out in a landing craft to be landed on Isla, and the truck got stuck in the water trying to get up from the landing craft onto the beach, so it was kind of towed up. So anyway, the first distillate really in November 1964 was put into Oloroso casks and some bourbon casks. And the original Black Beaumonts were in 1993, 2,000 bottles of 29-year-old Black Beaumont was released. 1994, another 2,000 bottles were released. And in 1995, 1,800 bottles were released. So that was a 31-year-old by that time.
The spirit was distilled before Ian McMillan was born, but he's been watching it mature in a series of very unique casks.
These were from the Williams and Humbert Bodega, where they one of their products was walnut sherry. Now, that's not walnut casks, that's still oak casks, but the actual product that was matured off originally was walnut sherry. And it gives a darker, richer flavour. Harder to get a hold of these days, but we were fortunate that we had a run of casks that were of particularly high quality. So these casks came from this bodega. We filled them 93, 94, 95. They were the first three releases. We had some casks that were surplus, locked them away, and the quality team looked at them periodically over the next 12 years and then decided, you know, this is time sort of to bottle this off. 2006, and we bottled that off as the final run ever of Black Beaumont. So only 827 bottles in the world, of which 80 are coming to the US.
Now, what is the difference in taste profile between this Black Beaumont and the original?
I think it's just a more developed and basically as refined as it can be. You know, we've just taken that up to where we think it is perfect. It's naturally come down in strength to about 40.5%. So we've lost a lot of volume. Just these extra years interacting with the oxygen in the air, just polishing it up. Making it as pure and refined as it can possibly be.
For those who will never get a chance to taste this, what does it taste like?
It's strange because you would think that Beaumont is going to be smoky. That's the signature of Beaumont. But when it gets to 42 years old, that smokiness has dropped away dramatically and you'll get exotic fruit. And then it'll turn into a more rich, dark, sticky fruit. So I'm thinking things here like dates and figs, these sorts of flavours. And then you'll just get the lightest hint of smoke at the back of the palate.
Now, there's a lot of discussion about really old whiskeys, and we talked about this a little bit earlier, but the conventional wisdom with really old whiskeys is that after 25 years or so, they begin to fade a bit. This is now a 42-year-old whiskey. How is it compared to, or how is it holding up compared to another 42-year-old of its type?
I think providing you use the correct raw materials, so good quality casks, and continually monitor the aging process, you can't lock a cask away for 40 years and assume it's going to be good. You have to open that up periodically, look at the spirit, you know, really get to know what you want from that spirit and how you're going to get there. So we've partnered a big quality team and we'll sit down, look at our spirits, decide with our production director just how best to approach this, and then we'll in some cases recast the whiskey, or if we think that the cask is still working incredibly well, then we'll leave it just to settle and continue its maturation where it is.
The obvious question here is, if this was among some of the first whiskey distilled under the Morrison regime at Beaumont, what happened in the years after that? Why is the whiskey, or why not, why was there not whiskey like this that just sort of continually was produced?
There is from that year onwards, because that's when the quality was starting to be controlled critically. We changed the way that we heated the stills, so there was many changes made to Beaumont. And I think as you see the passage through time, in 10, 15, 20 years' time, hopefully you'll still be seeing fantastic Beaumonts of similar age, perhaps even older.
But nothing compared to the first one?
No, definitely compared to the first one, because that's a house style. So I think once you, it's not like grapes that depend so much each year on the weather. We're using the same apparatus to create this, so we don't have good vintages. We have good spirit. We can get much more consistency than you would get if you're relying on sunshine to ripen your grapes. That's not something at the distillery. You need good malted barley, you need good yeast, and you need a fantastic operating team to run that distillery, because they really are the most important people. They will know when to make small changes in the distillation process so that they can guarantee the consistency of quality that's going to be filled into cask.
Now, this is almost, the original Blackmore is almost a mythological whiskey to a lot of people. And a lot of people I know are going to be surprised to hear that there were actually more casks left. Why wait this long to release it?
I suppose the question I would pose to that, why not? You're just trying really to see how far you can push the boundaries. And I think we've really got to that sort of boundary with this. If it matures for much longer, the strength would drop below 40. It would no longer be seen as Scotch whisky under the Scotch Whisky Act. But at the same time, we've not released this purely because the strength has dropped low. We've released this because we think it's at the peak of its lifestyle.
And there's no more of it left in the warehouse?
There's no more Black Beaumont left in the warehouse. There's more 1964 left, but no more Black Beaumont.
What's the difference?
Different cask types.
What's being done with those casks?
Those casks now will actually be used for public relations, you know, events, launch events, as props, because there's no life left in the cask for new spirit. You know, this is something now, it's got to the end of its lifespan, and it'll now be used to support the sales teams and the promotion teams out in market.
It's time to try the mythological Black Beaumont here. It is, as you say, completely dark. It's just amazingly oily. And it is the darkest whiskey I've ever seen.
It's at 40.5%. This is the strength that it has naturally dropped down to. You get much more, as I'm sure you're aware, activity in the cask with the more oxygen you have. So as it matures down, the oxygen really polishes and gives you the perfect sort of whiskey. Now, at 42 years old, if you say to people, what do you expect from Beaumont? The first thing they'll usually say is smoke. When you get to 42 years old, the last thing you will see with a Beaumont is smoke. You'll see exotic fruit, mangoes, papayas, lychees.
This is almost like sniffing a juice bar, almost, compared to what I would expect from whiskey. I don't get any smoke in this whatsoever.
But very much on the aftertaste.
Nosing this, I get amazing amounts of fruit. It's almost like smelling a juice bar, almost. But it also smells exactly like I would expect the whiskey warehouse to smell like, almost. It smells old, dusty, sort of that little, that smoky aroma that you would expect in the, as the casks are being stored. There's a little bit of brininess in the nose because of the location by the ocean, but not much more than that. Tasting it, just 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 an explosion of fruit. It's the mango becomes really obvious. It is amazingly wonderful. It morphs into a bit of a tartness that's hitting the top of the tongue. And just those citrus notes continue all the way through to the finish. This is not a whiskey I would ever want to put water in. It's already at about 45.5 to 41% alcohol. The water would kill it. But this is like no other whiskey I have ever, ever tasted.
John Hansel of Malt Advocate rated the new Black Beaumont a 97. That's the highest rating he's ever given a whiskey. Now, I deliberately did not read his blog posting before tasting the Black Beaumont, but that's the same rating I gave it that night. By the way, there will be a new trilogy. While there is no more Black Beaumont left to bottle, there is spirit from 1964 aged in bourbon barrels that will be sold as White Beaumont, and a third edition of 1964 spirit that hasn't been named yet. As for the price, the suggested retail, $4,500 U.S., For the record, a complete set of the original Black Beaumont trilogy sold at the Christie's auction in New York last December for $18,000. That's all for this episode of Whiskey Cast. Don't forget to check out the redesigned Whiskey Cast website with links for this episode, the calendar of events, a complete archive of past episodes, and the Whiskey Cast store. It's on the web at www.whiskeycast.com. I'd like your feedback on the site, along with any other comments or questions you may have. My email address is comments@whiskeycast.com. WhiskeyCast is a production of MG Media, copyright 2008, and comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.